Welcome to Tilly's Trans Tuesdays. This is part one of a two-part series that are some of the most important Trans Tuesdays ever. Cis friends, I need you to listen, share, and talk about it. Here comes Trans Politics 1. Stop tolerating transphobia. Hi, I'm Tilly Bridges, your host, and I'm joined by my writing partner, my best friend, my wife, our token cis representation, the lady who probably couldn't be transphobic if she tried, Susan Bridges.
Hello.
And let's please not test that.
I am voted most likely to punch someone, so.
Who voted you that?
Me.
Oh, well, that tracks. Our guest this week is Rafael Menez, an autistic person trying to make his community better. He graduated from the University of Chicago in 2011 with a BA in political science and has been helping with his family's daylily nursery since then. He's been a home health care aide since 2016 and involved in local politics since 2018. He's running for Pinole City Treasurer because his community deserves to have an accessible budget and to hold the city accountable for how that budget is implemented. His FPPC ID number is 1467612. Welcome, Raphael.
Thank you.
Okay, so let me ask you, what is it about city treasurer that drew you to that position? Why is that the one that you wanted to run for?
Because I've always been able to interpret the city's budgets better than most of the people that I've seen working on interpreting the budgets.
Sure.
Like, and I've also been able to find basically trends, I think, at least partially because I'm autistic, and be able to graph out and map out those trends in ways that other people maybe aren't able to.
Sure.
Like, for example, I was able to show graphically that although the short-term issue the city's dealing with is its retiree investment costs, if a longer-term healthcare costs are going to become a much, much bigger problem because the retiree healthcare costs never stop going up 5% per year every single year.
Wow. So do you think that's, like, I don't have that much experience with people who are city treasurers. You know, like, I research the ones when they come up in our city and vote for the one that seems the best, but, like, I don't know a whole lot about the job. And so do you feel like there's, I mean, you kind of hinted at that, but, like, do you think most people that get elected to those don't have any experience with that or knowledge about what they're doing? Like, is there any special requirements that they should be having? Or, like, for people listening, what is the thing you should be looking for in your city treasurers when you're voting?
Well, first, I think it's important to note the nature of the role. In Pinole, the city where I'm running in specific, a lot of what you would think would be done by the city treasurer is in fact done by the city's finance director. The city's finance director is the person who's in charge of day-to-day finances, who makes the final decision about what the city invests in. The treasurer's role is to offer advice on the city's investments, prioritizing safety, liquidity, and yield, and to basically double-check all the transactions, the city's warrants, make sure that money's going, the amount's correct, and that it's going to who it's supposed to go to.
Okay, so you're like a little bit of a fail-safe to say, hey, wait a minute, you're doing this wrong.
Yeah. I know that in some other places, it might be more different and more involved.
Sure.
It's more advisory.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I think is probably a little bit different from city to city, depending on how each one runs it. There's like a standard definition of what it might be. Like even here where we live in Burbank, like I've never lived in a place before that has a mayor system that works like ours does. Like we only have a mayor for 1 year. And they rotate through all the members of the city council get to be mayor for a year, which is really strange.
Yep, that's how Pinole does it.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, so it really changes. Like, you're not just voting for who you want to be mayor. You're voting for who might be mayor in 2 years. And so it's really important you research every single person. And And I never had to deal with that before. There was always just like one person, you know, that, and then you reelected them every 2-4 years or whatever. So politics, it's weird.
I'm personally a fan of rotation of power, honestly. I find that having one person hold on to power for too long harms them and harms the people that they govern. I mean, I haven't been able to find any secondary evidence to back this, but I remember there was this one article I read in The Atlantic back in 2017 where they did a study that found, basically they were doing MRI scans of people and they found that excess amounts of power literally caused damage to people's brains. So,
wow.
I wish there were more sources on that or anything that had followed up on it past 2017. So I could say more certainly whether it was one way or another, but certainly it had an impact on me.
Yeah, I mean, okay, it's just anecdotal, but I would say that tracks, you know, some of those people that you see that have been in Congress or whatever for like 30 years and you're like, you are doing some really messed up stuff. Maybe let's get some new folks in there. So, yeah, I mean, like, you know, another thing I think is a real issue is like lifetime appointments to the Supreme Court. That is bonkers bananas. No, that needs to be changed so fast. So it won't be changed fast, if ever, but
not fast enough.
Yeah, it is best up.
I think we should probably be more clear about just what during good behavior actually means, but that'll be a big fight.
Yeah, unfortunately, we have some intentional bad actors in this country. All right, well, let's move on a little bit. For you, what has been the best thing about transitioning?
Sure. So I guess I'd describe myself as non-binary, more than transgender, I guess, because I don't really feel dysphoria with my body. Like, I felt more like myself after I grew a beard than I did before, for example. But at the same time, I don't feel like the identity of male is quite 100% match for who I am. So I figured non-binary is probably the closest set of words to match up with my identity, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So have you always felt that way? Or is it this like something you realized recently? Or how did that all work for you?
I guess I've sort of had, you know, thoughts along those lines. But I think I started thinking about it more after I went to women's only events. And, you know, I wasn't that much of an outlier or disruptive there, even though at the time I identified as, you know, he, him, like it wasn't this huge issue for me to be there. I felt like I belonged in that space.
Yeah.
So it started me thinking a bit more about, you know, my gender identity. And then I don't remember the exact inciting thing. I just remember that a while back, a few months ago, I was thinking about, you know, whether, you know, I should say he, they, or he, them, or he, him. And I wasn't sure whether any of those were right. And I asked some people for advice, and one of them referred me over to your Discord, Tilly. And that was really helping me figure out, you know, like the right words and stuff. Like, I don't really feel like a they, but I feel like a them, if that makes any sense.
Sure. I mean, it's all so very personal to all of us, right? And so it's absolutely fine for whatever works for you to be what works for you. And I'm so glad that the Discord helped you with that. That's really great. It's such a lovely place. And that's wonderful. So do you feel then that like now you feel more comfortable in yourself and who you are than you did before? Like has the pronoun, at least examining it, given you more peace or a better sense of self?
I think once I decided on the pronoun, it gave me the comfort of not being worried about choosing it or figuring that out, like feeling like I'm sort of in a stable state, you know, like,
yeah.
And just having it there on things like Zoom or whatever. It's not something that I feel the need to bring up constantly. If people just want to call me he or whatever, that's fine. But one thing that was slightly annoying to me was when I was filling out the candidate application form, I noticed that there was a list of options for gender on the check marks, but you can only check male or female. There was no like non-binary option. So a little bit irritated about that.
Yeah, that's one of the things I think that permeates a lot of our society, you know, the assumption of cisgenderness in like in bureaucratic things like that on forums. And it's like, it's not hard to just put a third option that says non-binary or, you know, it's like
other,
so easy
or whatever
or something. Give people an option for something that is closer to how they identify and who they are. And that's just, I don't know.
Yeah, and I've definitely come across forums that just have male, female, non-binary, and no transgender option.
Well, it's not always relevant to know.
Right, but I just, like, it's an imperfect process.
Yeah.
We'll try to figure out how do we make these more inclusive. But yeah, now I'm annoyed by them too when it's just made okay wrong. I'm like, come on.
Yeah. I mean, I had that same issue, like you said, when there's no way to denote that you're trans on a form, like even with our medical insurance. I think they have an option for non-binary, but they do not have an option for trans man or trans woman. And so they have me in their system as a woman. And so I get these notices for cervical exams. And I'm like, you know that I don't need those because I don't have a cervix.
I mean, but all the medical stuff is kind of a wreck.
Yeah, it is. It's
for everyone.
True. This country is so great. Okay. Before we get into this week's topic, do you want to let people know where they can find you online if they'd like more information?
Sure. So the simplest way is to go to my website, https://menisfortreasurer.org, and that's MENISFORTREASURER.org. And then I've also got a Facebook page. That link is more complicated. You have to do Facebook/people/menis-4-treasurer-2024. I think that works. For whatever reason, Facebook won't let me set up a simpler link this time.
Yeah, Facebook's a pain in the butt. There will be links to both of those sites in the show notes. So if you didn't catch them, that's okay. Check the show notes and you can find the links to them right there. Okay, before we get into talking politics, I wanted to say that you may have noticed TillysTransTuesdays.com got a much-needed facelift and usability upgrade a couple months ago. It happened right before the 7-part I Saw the TV Glow Trans Allegory episodes, but those were recorded before the upgrade was done, so I didn't get to mention it until now. Everything is categorized into Trans 101, Trans Life, Cis Allyship, and Trans Media like before, but everything's much more readable and also fully searchable now. It's a really great site. I'm really proud of it now. So definitely stop by and check that out and share it around. And I thank the team who helped me port hundreds of my essays over onto the new site on the site, but I wanted to take a second to thank them here too. So to Callista White, Duna Sandel, Janet Logan, Jennifer Lee Wallace, Nikki, and Tanya Marie, thank you so much for helping make that possible. If I'd had to do it all myself, it'd have been years before it was done. I also want to mention that after next week's episode, Trans Politics 2, this show will be off for a week because that will be November 5th, 2024, which is Election Day here in the U.S., and that's why Trans Politics 1 and 2 are leading right up to it. But as trans rights, our very right to exist in the U.S., is up in the air pending the election results, sadly, I'm going to spend the day being a nervous, anxious wreck hiding under a blanket. Trans Tuesdays will return on November 12th. Okay, let's get into it. We're going to start with a seemingly innocuous meme that was posted by a family member of mine that we'll call Buddy. It spurred a long, drawn-out discussion. It's so, so wrong and harmful, but the very idea of that was something that he could not or would not grasp. The meme was white text on a black background that reads, "If you are my friend and you support Trump, you are my friend. If you are my friend and you support Biden, you are my friend. If you feel the need to degrade those who feel differently than you, maybe we are not friends." And I superimposed a large red nope over the top of it. Buddy says he fully supports me and my right to be who I am and, quote, has no problem with me. But you know what? That's bullshit. Since he doesn't automatically consider candidates with anti-trans policies not worth voting for, he also thinks it's fine to be friends with people who actively hate me for existing. But he doesn't see why he can't be friends with both me and the bigots. In his mind, quote, we can have a difference of opinion, there's nothing wrong with that. Except this isn't a difference of opinion, is it? That meme treats, quote unquote, degrading someone for their support of Trump as the same as degrading trans people for who we are and our very right to exist. Those two things are not the same. Fighting back against someone who wants me dead is not the same as being the person who wants me dead. One of those is objectively wrong. My life is literally in danger if Republicans take power, and my right to exist is apparently up for debate. No human's right to exist should ever be up for debate. That should go without saying. That is not a difference of opinion. Favorite pizza toppings, or singers, or TV shows are a difference of opinion. People who think I should have no rights is not a valid opinion. By continuing to be friends with the bigot, Buddy upholds the system of oppression that harms trans people. For more on how if you're not actively helping trans people, which includes not being friends with transphobes, you are, in fact, part of the systems that oppress us, See my book, Begin Transmission, The Trans Allegories of the Matrix, because those movies have a whole lot to say about the topic. If there are no consequences for bigots supporting hate and violence, why would they ever stop doing it? When I point this out, Buddy is very mad at me. He supports me, so he says, how could I be so intolerant of a bigot's intolerance of me? Meanwhile, he completely misses the point that bigotry should never be tolerated for any reason. Okay, I wanted to ask if you have run into situations like this, Raphael, where people you know have equated pushing back against bigotry with bigotry itself.
I don't think anyone's used those exact words around
well,
me.
Yeah.
No. People, you know my opinions and where I stand on this sort of thing. That's part of why I wear the colors that I do to make it clear to people. The most I'll get is sort of like mealy mouthed, well, I don't know if I want to support the whole United Against Hate stuff or whatever, but like most of the time people are not going to be openly bigoted in my presence. So that's, I guess, one of the challenges of being somebody who looks like a cis white male is you're not necessarily going to see the bigotry, because a lot of the time people are going to be nice people around you. You know, they're going to be civil. Even if there are other people who are minorities around you or whatnot, they're still going to be civil towards them while they're near you because, you know, appearances.
Yeah, yeah. The appearance of cis white male privilege permeates the whole area around you, and people will behave very differently around you than they do around other people. That is absolutely true. Yeah, like I haven't had people, well, okay, I have had a few people that I didn't know be openly bigoted around me and transphobic, but like, people that I do know that I am friends with or was friends with wouldn't be openly bigoted around me. But when you ask them, why are you still friends with a horrible bigoted person? Why do you want that person in your life? They get very upset and very uncomfortable. That's not a thing they want to examine about themselves.
One sort of thought I have is some people probably see remaining friends with bigoted people as, you know, trying to persuade them to, you know,
sure,
over time be less bigoted or even not bigoted at all. Ideally, they figure if you just cut people off and leave them away, that they're just going to go more over towards bigotry because the other side's going to say, oh yeah, we don't do any of that stuff, we'll just accept you no matter what. But you know,
right, we're going to get into this a little bit more later, but like, if you're actively trying to convince someone to change, that is absolutely wonderful and we need a lot of that. But there's a lot of people that don't want to do that. They just want to be like, well, that's just a difference of opinion. And no, it's so much more than that. Tolerating bigotry leads only to violence and fascism. Does that remind you of our state of existence? This is the paradox of tolerance. See the link about it in the show notes. Here's a quote. In order to maintain a tolerant society, the society must retain the right to be intolerant of intolerance. For more on that, you can also see the excellent article, Tolerance is Not a Moral Precept, linked in the show notes. Here's a few choice quotes from that. Tolerance is not a moral absolute. It is a peace treaty. Tolerance is a social norm because it allows different people to live side by side without being at each other's throats. It means that we accept that people may be different from us in their customs, in their behavior, in their dress, in their sex lives, and that if this doesn't directly affect our lives, it is none of our business. But the model of a peace treaty differs from the model of a moral precept in one simple way. The protection of a peace treaty only extends to those willing to abide by its terms. It is an agreement to live in peace, not an agreement to be peaceful no matter the conduct of others. A peace treaty is not a suicide pact. This is a variation on the old saw that, quote, your right to swing your fist ends where my nose begins. We often forget or ignore that no right is absolute because one person's rights can conflict with another's. This is why freedom of speech doesn't protect extortion and the right to bear arms doesn't license armed robbery. Nor is this limited to rights involving the state. People can interfere with each other's rights with no government involved, as when people use harassment to suppress other people's speech. While both sides of that example say they are, quote, exercising their free speech, one of them is using their speech to prevent the others. These are not equivalent. The balance of rights has the structure of a peace treaty. Buddy asks how I could ask him to cut a friend or someone he loves out of his life. I didn't actually ask him to do that, but his choice to not do that sends a message to everyone he claims to support. He will tolerate transphobia. Hating me for existing is not a deal breaker for him, which sends a message about exactly what he really thinks of me and my human rights. And that message is, Buddy's friendship with bigots is more important to him than my right to exist and have equal rights. Meanwhile, I'm over here wondering why anyone would want to be friends with a bigot. Who wants someone with that kind of hate in their life? Why? Why would you want that person around? So, Raphael, you said you haven't really experienced people that were, like, openly bigoted to you or around you necessarily, but have you had any issues where you lost somebody, like a friend, family, or just even an acquaintance because of their intolerance or their refusal to not even just necessarily accept you, but, you know, anyone different from themselves? Have you ever run into that kind of conflict?
I don't know. I mean, part of the problem is, and this might tie into my being autistic, it feels like I have difficulty maintaining friendships in general. Like, most people have people who, you know, reach out to them regularly, right? Like, to check on how they're doing or whatever. I don't really have that. I've got like one person who I reach out to and we talk to each other about once a week. But beyond that, you know, people talk to me sometimes in various political contexts or whatever. But I find friendship to be challenging for the past few years.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that applies to a lot of people because we're all dealing with so much and it can be hard to keep up even with people that you want to. But I will say that I notice you on the Discord and I'm so happy every time that I see you pop in and say good morning or I really enjoy seeing you there and talking with you. So consider me your friend, please. And I care about you. And if you didn't show up for a few days, I would be like, where's Raphael? Is he okay? So
thank you. I appreciate that.
Of course.
I think that a lot of us come into contact with people that we know are bigoted.
Yeah.
And we don't have that kind of relationship where we feel like we can pressure them, maybe.
Sure. If you don't know them well enough, it can be a hard topic to broach. I mean, it's hard even when you do know them really well. It can be even harder.
Yeah. I mean, and also family members.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a very difficult relationship with my family because they are bigoted and racist. And there's only so many times you can say the same things and you realize they're maybe not going to change. I just wanted to mention that, though, in terms of social pressure.
Yeah.
Because I just read Rabbi Danya Rutenberg's book on repentance and repair.
Yes.
And part of repentance and repair is also being part of a community. So you have friends, you have family, you have acquaintances, and actually taking the time to speak up about those things is social pressure.
Right.
And that can also push people to think about their actions and thoughts and do the right thing.
Yeah. I mean, there are definitely instances where people may hold bigoted opinions that they're not even conscious of. You know, those implicit biases that society works into all of us. And sometimes just pointing those out can wake people up to that, you know? It just depends on the person.
Yeah, and you could go into a whole thing, too, about how, like, white people especially getting super defensive about, hey,
oh, yeah,
you said something bigoted.
Yeah, yeah.
Versus, well, you're calling me a racist. Like, those are two different things. Like,
yeah,
we are all trained in bigotry.
Yep.
Because of the way our society is structured.
Right.
We are exposed to it like a fire hose of it our entire lives.
Sadly, yes.
So there's like no way you don't absorb some of those things.
Yeah, exactly.
And so taking the time to actually think about that and make other people accountable for that, they're hard things.
They are.
But they're not completely useless, even though it feels that way sometimes.
Yeah, I think it's really important to remember the difference between structural and individual racism, because a lot
Absolutely.
Of the problem that people have is they're thinking of racism as a sort of this religious moral failing concept, but
right,
or it's like only a thing you do,
right. And not a thing. Yeah, right. Like didn't call someone a slur, so I'm not a racist, but
yeah,
you have racist beliefs that you're upholding, and yeah
it's structural. And a lot
exactly.
of people just don't like the idea of structural things too. That's a whole different problem.
Sure. Well, and they're so much harder to change and to figure out. So it's a mess.
I still remember the one time, I think it was back in 2021, where DeSantis's attorney general had to give a definition of woke. And he was like,
uh-huh.
somebody who believes that structural injustices exist and that they need to be addressed. I'm like, well, that's a great definition of woke. Why don't they use that more often? Because I know if they use that definition, people might realize, hey, being anti-woke is actually a really bad thing.
Right. Yeah. Caring about others and wanting actual true equality is all it is. When you stop to just think about it, it's really hard to be anti-woke. All right. Let me give you another example from another former friend. Let's call him Dominic. Dominic and I were pretty good friends in high school. I hung out at his house a lot, and I was a couple years older than him, and he looked up to me a lot, even though I was a very weird and awkward kid buried in dysphoria. Dominic and his entire family are Mormon. At the time, as a seemingly cishet white boy who was entirely unaware of the Mormon Church's stance on queer people, who I did not know I was one of, I was unconcerned with his religion. Not long after my lovely wife Susan and I here got married, Dominic sent me a message, and it said that he knew I loved my wife a lot, and the only way I could be assured of being with her forever, after death and in heaven, was if we converted to the LDS Church. Kind of appalling, ain't it? That was the last time we talked. I had no interest in being friends with someone who could say something so hurtful and try to convert me when he knew full well I wasn't even Christian and had no intentions of ever becoming one. But earlier this year, Dominic sent me a message apologizing for what he said and trying to convert me. I was surprised he even remembered, and I thanked him for the apology. He wanted to rekindle our friendship, knowing full well that I am a trans woman, and I asked him if he was still Mormon and supported the LDS Church. The LDS Church that is not only bigoted towards its queer members, but used its money and influence to try and spread its bigotry by getting marriage equality banned in California when their home state is Utah. There's a link about that in the show notes. And you'll note we're right back to the paradox of tolerance, as quotes from LDS officials in that article whine about being held accountable for spreading their hate as if that is not only equal to, but more damaging than, the hate and bigotry they were trying to legislate into law. It's appalling. But that was 2008, Tilly. Surely the LDS Church is more accepting now. No, I assure you they are effing not, especially to their trans members. There's a link in the show notes. Here's some quotes. Quote, individuals who have transitioned in any way, whether surgically, medically, or socially, cannot work with children, serve as teachers in their congregation, or fill any gender-specific assignments such as president of the Women's Relief Society. Excuse me? Quote, these same church members should use a single occupancy restroom when available. If unavailable, they can counsel with leaders to find an alternative solutions. Examples suggested include people using the restroom that aligns with their assigned sex at birth, or one that corresponds to the individual's, quote, feeling of their inner sense of gender, with a trusted person ensuring that others are not using the restroom at the same time. What the hell? Quote, also unchanged was the instruction that all soul-saving rituals, including baptism and temple rites, must be received according to a person's assigned sex at birth. Only those who have not transitioned in any way can be baptized and confirmed, although possible exceptions can be made by the governing First Presidency. Individuals who transition in any way cannot receive the recommend needed to enter the church's temples, where the faith's highest ordinances are performed. Do I even have to tell you that for some trans Mormons, preventing them from transitioning is a literal death sentence? The LDS Church would rather their trans members die before they transition. Quote, Lori Lee Hall said she hadn't been to church in some time but grew emotional when she thought of the impact these new policies could have on those she knows within the trans community, including young people, who continue to make the church their spiritual home. It's dehumanizing and degrading to have a chaperone clear a restroom before you can use it, she said, explaining that few Latter-day Saint meeting houses have unisex restrooms, a fact she gleaned during her years designing the buildings. Hall, author of the forthcoming Dictates of Conscience, From Mormon High Priest to My New Life as a Woman, also pointed out that preventing transgender members from working with children and youth puts them in a category with sex offenders. So, you know, maybe you can see why I was concerned that this was an organization he still was a member of, supported, and still gave a 10% tithe on his income to, link in the show notes if you're unfamiliar with Mormon tithing. And that's money that the church has readily demonstrated it will use to spread its bigotry and influence laws, entirely ignoring the supposed separation of church and state. I'm going to share my response to him, because it's something more people need to see and understand. I know we don't talk much anymore, and we're both very different people than we were in high school. This is going to get awkward, though, because there's no other way to say this than to say it plainly. If you're still an LDS member, as I presume you are, as I know your faith has always been important to you, I don't see how we can really have any kind of relationship. Your church holds horrible, harmful views about trans people filled with factual misinformation that are tantamount to asking someone to go through a lifetime of torture and pain. The kind of torture and pain that makes trans suicide rates so very high. Some 80% of trans kids contemplate suicide and over 40% attempt it. And it's not being trans that causes that, because being trans is no different than being left-handed or having red hair. It's just the way some people are. It's the response from highly transphobic society and institutions, including your church, that contribute to how difficult it is just to exist as a trans person in this world. If you're still a member, I cannot in good conscience have a friendship with someone who'd be a member of a group that does not believe people like me deserve equal rights or treatment for our condition that is recognized by literally every major medical association in this country. It's like telling people with cancer to just live with it and not seek chemo. It's horrific and unconscionable, and it's killing people like me all over the world. I'd ask you how you'd feel if your church said left-handed people couldn't be full members or campaigned to take away the rights of left-handed people. Only, you know, this is much worse because life with gender dysphoria is a misery and pain you cannot imagine. If you're somehow no longer a member of that church, I'd be happy to talk with you further. If you are, however, and they have your support, I'm afraid I just can't have any kind of relationship with someone who doesn't believe I deserve equal rights. I deserve better than that, so does everyone. And so I'd ask you to not contact me again, because knowing a high school friend I cherished doesn't consider me an equal human being in all rights is honestly too painful to bear. I wish you and your family nothing but the best. May safety and happiness and love be in abundance. And I hope you never know what it's like to have half the country see you as less than human. Be well. Whew. Okay, he replied and said that he's watched my journey from afar and, quote, admired my courage. I shouldn't have to be courageous to exist, though. See episode 17 of this show on trans courage for more on that. And stated that he is still a member and supports his church, but also, quote, sees me as a fully equal human being deserving of love, compassion, and peace. And I'm sorry, but no. No, you don't get to say I deserve love, compassion, and peace, and that you, quote, unquote, see me as equal while you support and give 10% of your income to an organization that treats trans people as second-class citizens, discriminates against us, and uses the money you give them to try to take our rights away. You cannot do both of those things. They are mutually exclusive. And so I replied, Hi, I'm heartened by your reply and that it shows you to still be the kind, wonderful person I wanted to be friends with. The part I have trouble reconciling is your continued membership in and support of an organization that's doing so much harm. We don't share the same spirituality, and I'm not even Christian, but to me that seems to go against everything you actually believe. Continued membership and tithing condones and supports their actions, even if you personally don't. It's tacit endorsement of what they're doing and the trans lives they're destroying. I know so many trans people, trans kids. I was a trans kid and didn't even know it, because my family and society told me that was impossible and shameful and forced me to bury it and caused severe trauma I may never fully recover from. I've seen the same struggle in so many other people forced to repress themselves for their entire lives for the same reason. I see kids with accepting families who have a chance to avoid a lifetime of pain and the ungodly body horror of watching yourself go through the wrong puberty, and states with the support of organizations like your church telling them no, they must suffer. I don't see how that can be reconciled. People who donate and support those who want to take my rights away aren't really my friends, because what friend would do that to another? That's not friendship, that's not love, that's not kindness. And I'm not sure how anyone could expect someone to be friends with someone supporting the guy with his boot on my neck. I don't remember much of my past due to the dissociation that comes from the horrors of gender dysphoria, but I actually do remember the event you mentioned. That was part where he tried to gently convert me. If not in specifics, at least in how it made me feel, and I appreciate the apology. Thank you. I'd hoped perhaps he was working within the church to try and get them to change their policies, but he wasn't. I hoped I could help him see the harm he's doing in supporting the people who oppress trans folks. I don't know if I did. He did not respond after that. Okay, Raphael, I want to get your take on all of this. You said you didn't really know of anybody in your life personally who is a member of an anti-trans organization, but do you see that there's any way to reconcile those things? Like, if he was working to change things within the church, I would respect that so much, because that would be so hard and he would be doing the right thing. And I would feel like you're showing that you do really care about trans rights and I could still have a relationship with you. But the lack of doing anything about it, not caring to, I don't know, I feel like I can't in my head reconcile those two things. I don't know how to have a relationship with someone like that.
I don't think you could, honestly, because, unless you're trying to change the organization that you're part of, then saying,
Yeah.
hey, but they see you and whatever, well, it rings a bit hollow, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It does. It's like I believe he genuinely feels that he does accept me and trans people, but he also supports that church and gives 10% of his yearly income to them, and it just feels like I
No,
don't
I've
know.
run into this too with Trump supporters,
Oh, yeah.
where it's like, I'm not a bigot, but bigotry isn't a deal breaker for
Right,
me.
like I talked about earlier with that family member who posted that meme.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're like, okay, maybe you're not bigoted, but you have no problem with a bigot.
Right, exactly. I mean, and that's like Raphael said, then you're getting into systemic and structural things. And they're like, I'm not personally a bigot, or they don't feel that they are, but they don't see how supporting the structural
Is upending the
bigotry
system.
is just as harmful, sometimes even more so, because the system and the structure has so much power over us, more than any one individual person does. So, yeah, I don't know. It is a mess. Okay, listen, this is a zero-sum game. You cannot support my right to exist and be who I am and support the bigots who want trans people to not exist. Friends don't do things like that. If someone wants to take my rights away, they are obviously not my friend. And if you give money to that person, tolerate that person, vote for that person, you are supporting that. Further, if you don't try to stop them, you are aiding them. If you remain friends with them, knowing that they want to take my rights away, and you are not trying to convince them to change their minds, then you are supporting me losing my rights. That is a very hard pill to swallow. It means confronting friends and loved ones about the harm they're doing. It may mean those relationships are going to change. If you have the integrity to be an actual trans ally, saying you support us is wonderful, but without actions that support us, it's nothing more than platitudes to make yourself feel better. See the Trans Tuesday on performative allyship about a much less serious situation, but it illustrates the point very well, which is allyship in name only. You can find that at tillystranstuesdays.com. And then check out episode 8 of this podcast, Performative Allyship 2, False Allyship, which is when people who consider themselves allies are in fact part of the systems that oppress us and refuse to see it. You can also see the Trans Tuesday and multitude of Trans Tuesdays linked within about trans rage and how cis people keep forgetting about trans people and how absolutely vital real cis allyship is at tillystranstuesdays.com. And for an example of how even the smallest gesture can show you really do have our backs, listen to Proactive Allyship, aka Be an Accomplice, in episode 35 of this show. What will you do to stop this, cis folks? Do you care? Too often it seems you do not. See the Trans Tuesday on Trans Rage 2, Cis Apathy, also at TillysTransTuesdays.com. Think about what might happen if your Trump supporter friends and family lost their friends and family over their horrible support of hatred. Can you think of a stronger message to send that might wake someone up? There are consequences for your actions. Please come back next week for Trans Politics 2 and two of the most important things you can do to make life better for trans people. Thanks for being here, Raphael.
Thank you for having me.
I want to close by going back to that meme that opened the episode. Quote, if you are my friend and you support Trump, you are my friend. If you are my friend and you support Biden, you are my friend. If you feel the need to degrade those who feel differently than you, maybe we are not friends. Do you see it for what it is now? Do you see that it was designed to help make bigots feel better about their bigotry? Do you see that it was designed to help make friends of bigots feel like it's okay to be friends with bigots? But it's not. It can't be. Our literal lives are on the line. Tilly Bridges, end transmission. Tilly's Trans Tuesdays is hosted by Tilly Bridges and Susan Bridges, with audio editing and sound mixing by Jillian Morgan. The Google Doc and social media versions of this week's topic and all past topics are available at TillysTransTuesdays.com. Special thanks to Daisy and Jane for the use of Sorry Not Sorry as our show's theme music. Please stop by and show your support at daisyandjane.bandcamp.com and soundcloud.com/daisyandjane. You can find me at Tilly Bridges on Blue Sky, Twitter, and Hive, on Mastodon at tillybridges@mastodon.social, at facebook.com/tillysbridges, and on Insta and Threads at Heck Yeah Tilly Bridges. And you can find Susan on most of those at Susan L. Bridges. You can find Jillian at Audio Jillian on Blue Sky. You can join the Tillyverse Discord server by following the link at the very bottom of TillysTransTuesdays.com. We hold regular watch parties for the Matrix films and other trans movies where I do a live Q&A, and it's blossomed into a wonderfully supportive, compassionate, kind community of friends. We'd love to have you join us. For more information, visit PendantAudio.com. Thanks for listening.